you again. Am I on? Put me where I need to be. Thank you again for having me back a second time. It is a joy and an honor to be here with you today. So let us come to God in prayer. Good and gracious God, we ask that you take the hot coals off of your altar and touch these lips of clay so that the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our most holy redeemer. Amen. So, in thinking about what's going on, I'd like to bring you through through the thought process that I had this week, if I could, if you can stay with that, whatever rattles around in there to stay with that. So I'd like you to take you through the thought process. The gospel lessons in Mark are about two events that Jesus involved with, and frankly, I don't know what the big deal is because he hardly did anything. In the first event, and the Pharisees get all uptight because they're all like law-oriented, and this is kind of where we're kind of in the difference between faith and religion. The Pharisees were all about their religion, and Jesus was like, well, let's put that religion into action and into faith. So the disciples are walking through the grain fields, right? And the disciples were hungry. And they just started picking. It wasn't, I'm thinking that these grain fields were the part of the field where the farmer would leave for gleaning for those people who were hungry, who were traveling, who were poor, who were homeless. This is their food source. This is where their welfare way they did things that the farmer was required to leave part of the outside of the field untouched. So I'm thinking this is what the disciples are doing. They're going through. So it wasn't that they were stealing. They weren't doing that. It's not that they were eating it because they were allowed to do that. It was that it was Saturday, the Sabbath, the time to, you know, just relax and basically do nothing. But the act of taking it off the grain off is an act of work. So that was a work. And the Sabbath, the Pharisees said, nope, you can't do that. There is this command for rest on the Sabbath, and you guys are violating that. And I don't know what Jesus had anything to do with any of that, but he says, that there's scriptural support for this. You know, David did this way back when, like 1,500 years ago, and now you are, no. You Pharisees don't have any place to stand on this, and we have scriptural support on this as well. In fact, David did this. So Jesus goes on to say that which is holy, the Sabbath, was made for us and for our healing, for our human needs. So this day is for you, for Jesus to be here with you and God to be with you, not so that you can follow some laws because we'll get into that. So our purpose is not to adhere to rules to the detriment of human well-being. So for Jesus, in this particular case, it was all about feeding those people who were hungry who happened to be that day his disciples. So the feeling I get from what Jesus is telling me is that the Sabbath and all that is holy is made for us. Then that which is holy then seems very near and very close and very here, right? So the second event, also on the Sabbath, is when Jesus heals a man's withered hand. And frankly, I don't know what Jesus had anything to do with that. But let's look at that. As I look at the story, something really jumps out at me. Jesus merely commands the man to give him his hand, to stretch out his hand, not even give it to Jesus. I don't see any touching going on. I don't see any mud taking up and and mixing with spittle or anything. Jesus says, stretch out your hand to the man with the withered hand, right? And this got to me thinking about where does the power to heal and to transform actually come from? It did not come from following the laws of the Pharisees. If that were the case, this man's hand would already be healed, right? So it came from within the man himself. His faith healed his hand. Not that that's like scientific. This is all theological. So, but what happened is that Jesus motivated that man and encouraged that man to be whole, to be well, to be authentic, genuine, and integrated within himself. And so it came, so that willingness, that desire, I need wholeness in my life, came from Jesus, and it also came from within that man. That was that man's desire for himself. So the healing came from within, not from the laws of the Pharisees. And then I read the epistle lesson from Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. And the things that jump out at me this time are the light that is shining in the darkness, Paul says, is in our hearts. Our songs reflected that today, right? So that this darkness shines in our hearts. And that the treasure of God's light, the treasure, we talked about treasure earlier, is in God's light is held in clay jars, which is a metaphor. It's Paul's metaphor. And it could have been a metaphor that the Corinthians were also using about the human body. So that treasure of Christ is held within our body. Also our heart, our soul, the core of our being, however we understand ourselves to be. So the treasure is inside of us. It's here. It's not out there somewhere. It's here. So Paul lays out experiences of the human condition. We are afflicted. Well, why don't we stay afflicted? Because we move on. We move on because we are empowered and encouraged by Christ to move on. So we are not crushed. We are perplexed, confused, but not driven to despair. We are persecuted, but we are not forsaken. We are struck down, but not destroyed. So Paul also puts the presence of Christ and the strength to carry out, to carry things on squarely in each inside of each of us. These clay jars that we are, Paul says two more incredible statements there at the end. The life of Christ is visible in our mortal flesh, in us, right? And then he says, this life is in you. So Christ is in you. Christ's life is in you. The life of the divine is in you. All that heaven can pour out and offer to you is in you. So where is this treasure? This healing, empowering, enlightening spark of divine light? Both Jesus and Paul seem to be saying that the light of Christ resides within each of us, and not just the light of Christ, but Christ himself dwelling within each of us. So that gets me to thinking then about this dichotomy that we have about spirit and body, that spirit and body are somehow separate. I see Paul saying and Jesus saying, no, body and spirit are combined. We often hear, well, I'm just a spirit with a body. Well, no, I'm spirit and I am body, and they are indeed whole and intrinsically integrated. And then, so all of that, right? It's all rolling around in here. And that got me to thinking about something that I learned during my year doing clinical pastoral education while working as a chaplain at the Reading Hospital in Pennsylvania last year. So to background, mostly, our weeks to give you some set this up. Why I learned this. So, our weeks went something like this. We work as a chaplain during the days. At times we might be on call during the week for an 8-hour shift. So there was 3 8-hour shifts during the week. And then on the weekends, there were 4 12-hour shifts. Two 12-hour shifts on Saturday, 2 12-hour shifts on Sunday. And we would work one of those 12-hour shifts on the weekend. So that was basically our week. Thursdays, however, was our class time. And this is where we would bond and come together as a group. And there were 6 of us doing our CPE together. We started off with 7, and then she finished her 1 unit, and then there were 6 of us. So anyway, this is when we would present our verbatims in the morning and go over how we did, you know, interacting with patients in the hospital. And then in the afternoon, we would have a didactic session by either one of us, one of us 6, giving a report on something that we studied. And what I'm going to tell you is about a chapter in a book we each had to give a report on. Or our supervisor would give us a didactic session, something that she knew that we needed to know. So it was one of these didactic sessions in the afternoon on a Thursday when one of my cohorts, James, was giving a report on chaplaincy from a Buddhist perspective. And that I had sort of an aha moment at that time. Indeed, some light bulbs went on for me. And I want to share that. So this is kind of like a meditation time. So I'm not sure I remember anything what James said before or after, but I remember the middle part very clearly. So unlike Bob Dylan, who said the answer is blowing in the wind, James was telling us that the answer is inside of us. Let's say it's happiness, for example. Where do we find happiness? Do you expect happiness to come to you from somewhere out there? From someone else? Sometimes someone else can make us get us to be happy. But is that where our happiness resides? And are we dependent on that? Or from something else do we get our happiness from? So James puts it this way when he did his report. So let's say it's been a long day. Perhaps it's been a long, hard, a hard day's night, and you've been working like a dog and you should be sleeping like a log, right? And I know there's a song in there somewhere, but for the most part, it's been an emotionally draining day. You are physically tired, you're mentally tired, your body is sore, your feet are aching, your brain feels like mush, you just want to go home, right? The day seemed like it would never, ever end. But mercifully and praise be to God, you are on the way home now. And while driving home, your mind shifts from work to what's going to happen now at home and what's next when you get home. And usually on the way home, that what's next is what's for dinner. What are we going to have for dinner? And maybe you had something in mind already. And perhaps dinner was already pre-planned and you already have a grocery list already made. Well, that's if you're like one of those people that like to put things all your ducks in a row. Or maybe you like to fly by the seat of your pants, and you're one of those people. And then you're making this list up as you go along. What can I have for dinner? And you know darn well you have nothing at home, and you have to stop at the store. But as you get closer to the store, the thought of going grocery shopping is not so pleasant. You're tired, you're exhausted, you're emotionally spent. The thought of walking up and down an aisle, looking at stuff and bumping into people in your way, it's just not going to happen. And you don't want to wait in a checkout line, and then there's going to be a crying kid somewhere. It's just not going to happen, and I'm not going to the grocery store, even though you know there's nothing at home to eat. So you head home. You open the door, kick off your shoes, if you haven't already taken them off in the car already. And maybe you change your clothes, you pour a glass of wine, you plop down on the couch for now. But then dinner needs to be made. You're hungry. It's been a long day. You need some nosh, right? And maybe there's other mouths to feed as well. So you get up knowing full well there is nothing in the kitchen, right? There's nothing in the cupboard. You have nothing in the pantry. There's nothing there. So, but anyway, you get up and you start to open up the cabinet drawers. Maybe there's a jar of pickles or something in here, right? And you stare at the cupboard doors. You stare at the cupboard. There's stuff in there, but you're just staring. There's nothing in there. You close that up. Nothing there. Nope. You go to the refrigerator, and you open up the door, and you just kind of stand there. And then you forget why you're standing there, and you close the door. Nothing there. You open up the freezer. Now, I'm doing this because that's the way my freezer... I would love my dream refrigerators to have one of those French doors, and that opens up with the freezer on the bottom. That would be... That's my dream refrigerator. But nope, I got one that opens up this... The freezer's this way, and the, I don't know why the freezer's not there, because you... Any... So you go to the freezer, and wait, what? What did you just see? There's something there. There's some old chicken there. Well, it's not that old, but it's been there. You forgot about it, maybe, but it's enough. So you take that out. You take that out, and wait, what else is in there? There's a bag of frozen veggies. Wait, let's pull those out. You open up the cabinet, you go back to the cabinet, you pull out the cabinet, right? And you find some rice. Not a lot of rice, but enough. There's enough rice, right? And, oh, wait, there's this little jar of little can of mushrooms. We can use that. Wait, move that around. You got a jar of sauce. Forgot all about that, didn't you? So there it is. And in no time at all, voila, there's dinner. You had dinner all along. Maybe not what you were planning, but as it happens, you had dinner all the time, the whole time. It was there. It was in your cupboard. It was in your pantry. It was in your refrigerator. It was there. You just had to look for it. Move some things around. Dig around for it. The answer was inside there the whole time. So, like, now what? So what? Where does that take us? And that got me to thinking about something else that I'm reading in preparation for a week-long event at Lake Tahoe at Zephyr Point. I'm going to be taking an intentional ministry training seminar. It's week-long. It's coming up in mid-July. And they have us reading these books already. So the one book is a series of essays about transitional ministries and what might be going on in the congregation and how to work the thing that work the issues that are going on in each and every congregation. Each and every congregation is different. So the answer is not one size fits all, like the Pharisees would like to tell you. There's one answer for everybody. No, each congregation is very, very different. Right? So with the disciples, so the answers come from within each of us. There's not a universal prescription that happens. So what did the disciples need that day? They needed some food, right? And then what did the man need when he was at the temple and needed some, or at the synagogue and needed some healing? He needed some healing that day. He needed some wholeness. He needed to know that Jesus and God actually loved him. And that answer came from within, too, by the encouragement of Jesus. So, typically, each congregation, the answers will be different. They'll be your own. But the answer, the questions are, what is working well around here? What do you guys do well? That is an excellent question. Keep that. Then, as I'm reading, it says, the next question is, what is not working well around here? Well, that's a bad question. That's not a good question. Because this leads down to negativity, despair, sometimes depression. You're looking in the rearview mirror of what went wrong rather than looking through the windshield and seeing what we need to, where we need to go. So a better question might be, instead of what's wrong, what do we want more of? What do we want more of in our life? So that answer comes from within you, the congregation, right? And this is like looking forward. You're looking forward now. And it helps also to orient you to your present, and it helps you to define your mission, meaning, and purpose. What are we about? And then the third question is, some congregations will ask themselves, what is it exactly that they want in a minister? This is not such a productive question either, because the answer will kind of separate congregation from minister, rather than having some sort of unity going on with congregation and minister and mission and ministry and purpose. So it separates that, and the people start to lose voice in their future, and people from, and then they forgot, don't participate so much because then they rely on the minister. A better question would be to, what do you need your next pastor to achieve? Or no, what do you need in your pastor for you to achieve what you want for your future? For sure, each congregation will have different answers for those three questions. So, for example, First Congregational in San Francisco will be different than Mill Valley, will be different than Campbell, right? And you can take these questions, which are good questions for the congregation, but you can reframe them for yourselves, for individual purposes, right? What do I do well? What do I want more of in life? What do I need to do to achieve my goals and desires? The answers are inside of us, not out there somewhere, but they are inside of you. So I want you to take your finger and put an X here, right on your chest. Can be a big one, right? Because X marks the spot, because that's where the treasure is. Praise be to God. Amen.